Liz McIntyre is a consumer privacy expert and author of the book Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. In this amazing book, McIntyre and co-author Catherine Albrecht reveal how organizations like Procter & Gamble, Gillette, Walmart, and even the U.S. Postal Service plan to use tiny computer chips, smaller than a grain of sand, to track everyday objects, and even people, keeping tabs on everything you own and everywhere you go. Welcome to Law & Disorder, Liz.
Hello, Heidi. How are you?
Fine. We've read some alarming developments since we last spoke to you.
Yeah, I read one the other day, Liz, and I can't remember it exactly. Maybe you do. An article, maybe it was in the Times or somewhere, about 30 people having spy chips put in under their skin. The guys who were doing it were bragging about someday they hope to be able to just take their hands, you know, and... You know.
Oh, I know exactly what... Okay. This is a self-implantation, which is a totally different story. These are not, in many cases, chips meant to be implanted in human beings. These, in some cases, are chips that cost under $3. And people are actually puncturing their flesh in the webbing between their thumb and their finger and implanting chips so that they can do things like open doors and turn their computers on.
I know it's individuals doing it, but it was like a puff piece for it a little bit because the people spoken to, they bragged exactly about those kind of things. And what I feared about the article was that, you know, it sort of leads into what some of your critique is here, because it's saying, you know, these are the testers for what may sound like good things to people.
This is the brave new world, though. Liz, you know, let's back up a little bit for the listeners who didn't hear you on our show several months ago and for people just tuned in. Tell us what a spy chip is and what's so potentially scary about these things.
Okay, well, a spy chip is our nickname for radio frequency identification, RFID. It's a technology that uses these little computer chips, as Heidi mentioned, to track items from a distance. Now, these little chips are hooked up to miniature antennas, really, really small antennas, and the combination is known as an RFID tag. Now, these things can be so small, the antenna and chip combination, that they can be inserted in money, of all things. Most of them are a little bit bigger, though, but they're usually very small. They can be slipped in between layers of cardboard. They can be placed in the flexible labels on your clothing, and you'd never know that they were there, because they communicate by radio waves. And these little chips reflect back their numbers when a reader device in the environment powers them up. And these readers can be hidden anywhere in doorways, floor tiles, ceiling tiles. I mean, you could be in a park and there could be one hidden in a park bench. And silently and invisibly, this unique number could be gleaned from something that you're wearing or carrying. And, of course, it's not just a number. As we all know, numbers can link to unlimited information in a database somewhere, and there's the privacy concern.
Liz, is it corporate-driven? Is it corporations who are experimenting with the RFIDs?
Well, certainly the corporations, companies like Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Gillette, are very excited about this technology and have really tried to spread it. But they've also been joined by government agencies like the United States Postal Service, the Department of Homeland Security, and the State Department. Of course, the State Department is already... you know, putting these into passports.
They're going in every passport, right?
Yes. In fact, they're starting, supposedly, now to do this.
Right. It was January 2006, so anybody, I had recommended getting your passport before that date.
Because now you'll have a chip in it.
I always used to think it was creepy when you go to Europe and you go and check into a hotel and they take your passport and they keep it.
Yeah.
Now I think I'll let them keep it.
Well, Europe, how about going to China?
Now, let me ask you, the spy chips that you're talking about, which I understand they're going to be used primarily in... but not in live things, right? They're not the ones that are put in dogs. They're not the ones that these humans are testing. Similar or related?
Technology, Michael. I mean, you know, the same thing that can be put in a box, a variation of that can be placed in human flesh. And, of course, there you have the VeriChip. And, of course, these people you refer to, I call them do-it-yourself implanters, which I see as a sort of a whole different crowd, you know, than the VeriChip type thing. Yeah, those are all basically the same type of device. They all communicate silently and invisibly by radio waves, and they all work by, you know, communicating a unique number of some kind. They can also communicate information, but usually it's just a number to do things or to connect to other information.
This is a big fear, actually, because I think even if they don't start doing it routinely in the U.S., if I were like a company like that had like a lot of employees in a foreign country where they're kidnapped all the time, I would make all my employees have the chips put into them.
But you know what, Michael? What's really interesting is the chips right now, at least these VeriChips, the official chips, can only be read from a very short distance. So if someone's kidnapped, it doesn't really do a lot of good.
You're right.
Which is really interesting because they're kind of trying to sell this product, at least in South America, saying, wow, you know, for kidnapping victims, this is great. Well, it only is really helpful if you find the body parts later.
Gotcha.
Liz, in terms of reading them, I don't understand who has set up the technology, like a supermarket, a library. For the people who've self-implanted, where can they actually be read?
Well, right now, you know, only about 30 people have self-implanted, to our knowledge. I mean, I'm sure now it's being painted as some kind of a really cool gimmicky thing, like piercing, I guess.
Oh, that's right. That is where I read it. You know, that's what it, in the context of all those tattoo parlors, will start doing it. You're right.
They're going to decorate the entrance spot.
But who? Where can they be read?
Well, frankly, it depends on the type of technology you have as to what how it can be read and whether or not there's encryption on the devices. Now, these people who are self-implanting, some have worked up some kind of encryption schemes and some haven't. You know, it would have to be someone with the right reader device, meaning the right frequency, the right protocol, in order to read the chips. But, of course, you know, people who are interested in hacking and such things, you know, they work diligently, as we all know, based on other breaches of security and databases, that kind of thing. They work diligently to try to do this. In fact, we just recently reported that the VeriChip itself, the official human product, has been cloned. A gentleman named Jonathan Westhues, who's a security researcher. By the way, he also authored a chapter in an Addison Wesley textbook on hacking proximity cards. Says he has cloned the chip. We have a link to that at our website at spychips.com, that evidence. He worked with a reporter, Emily Newitz, who's writing an article for Wired, and she had one of these VeriChips implanted in her arm just to prove that these things could be hacked. Jonathan created a reader device. He was able to actually mimic the chip number. And I was on CNBC the other day talking with the people there, and they had Scott Silverman on. And the question is, you know, what does this mean for people who have gotten this chip, these chips implanted for security reasons or for medical records or to pay for their drinks? As you may know, a bar in Barcelona, Spain, was promoting this chip to their bar patrons as a way to open the VIP club doors and to pay for champagne and so on.
Yeah, but, you know, let's get paranoid for a second and combine the spy chip with the Patriot Act. You said before that you can get a number, like, say, a Social Security number, is the gateway to a vast amount of information on people.
Right.
So imagine if you have a spy chip in you and they can figure out from that spy chip who you are and what your Social Security number is, then they can get your medical records, they can get your court records, they can get your financial records, they can get your academic records. You're walking around, you're like an open book for people and hackers to read, right?
Well, that's very possible, but you know what we're more concerned about, Michael, is the more official readers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be kind of hard for most of the criminal element to actually use the information. I mean, they might get a number, they could track people with it, but in terms of getting very secure information, I'm more worried about, say, walking into my CVS pharmacy store with one of those spy-chipped credit cards they're sending out now, and having the store itself or some agent of you know the credit card company siphon my number from a long distance.
This is important. This is what's really going on right now, right?
Well, the cards are being sent out, and as far as like who's using them and how they're using them, that's a good question. Of course, the companies are saying, oh, these things can only be read from a short distance, which they illustrate with their reader devices on the counters, and they show how close consumers have to wave these cards in front of these readers. But that doesn't mean there can't be higher-powered antennas and antennas hidden in other places that could actually siphon this information from a much greater distance. And, of course, they have the keys to the database. So they don't need to figure out some way to crack into the database to get information.
So there are chips that operate as credit cards.
Well, they're embedded in credit cards, like the blue card has an RFID tag in it. And, of course, you have Blink now, which is the nickname they've given RFID so that people don't realize it's really RFID and a remotely readable.
I got an offer for that in the mail recently, a credit card called Blink.
And you probably never made that connection, right?
I thought, new product, but I ripped it up anyway.
So this thing has a little antenna in it that's in your credit card?
Absolutely.
And it broadcasts that to a device somewhere in that store.
Well, let me just make it clear that these are passive tags, most of them. In fact, the ones, they are passive tags, meaning there's no battery. So they really can't
broadcast
themselves. They're, you know, they have to be in range of a reader device that powers them up. And then, of course, the number is reflected back.
But these are the same kind of little things that are being put in clothes and other kinds of things and pallets.
Prototypes of the clothing labels and prototypes of things. Of course, we as consumers don't know if they're already in things because there's no labeling requirement. Already we know, because Walmart supposedly is telling consumers when there's RFID on something. We've seen some things that we know have RFID in Walmart stores, like some Hewlett-Packard printer scanners. And we have a picture of one of those RFID tags at our website at spychips.com.
We want to remind our listeners we're listening to Liz McIntyre, who with her co-author Catherine Albrecht has written a book called Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID.
What indication, Liz, do you have that government is in on the planning of this? Because it's really spooky, given what we just learned the last couple of weeks about the National Security Agency, the NSA, and what they're doing, what the military is doing. There's like dozens of government spy agencies out there. And now we learn that the NSA is operating on their own after requests from the Bush administration with no warrants. This seems to me to be a real potential mischief maker, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, we've got constitutional cowboys out there right now, and you never know what they're going to do. So, you know, we're worried. And, of course, we have a precedent set in our book, Spy Chips. Of course, we outline how the government used this technology early on to track human beings on Guantanamo Bay. They actually put RFID-laced bracelets on people and forced them to wear them, even though they didn't want to be numbered like that.
I didn't know that. I knew they forced them to wear bracelets, and some of my clients tried to rip them off, saying, you know, this shouldn't be a concentration camp, et cetera. But I didn't know. But now I recall you told me last time we spoke that they had RFIDs in some of these chips. And what was the advantage of doing that?
Well, the idea was to be able to remotely read who someone was. Probably part of it was that people didn't even know what it was. I mean, they didn't even tell you, an attorney, what the implications of the bracelet were. So they wouldn't understand, perhaps, that they were actually, that the military was actually able to siphon information from there remotely. So,
amazing.
So if they didn't understand that, then that would be an advantage the government would have over those people in monitoring and controlling those people.
How far could it be read from at a place like Guantanamo?
Well, that's an interesting question. Probably not from a great distance, and the readers were very large based on the pictures that I've seen. But, you know, again, what do people know? They don't know what that is. As far as they're concerned, it's a flashlight or, you know, whatever else. And, you know, they really don't know exactly what's going on. I mean, it was a difficult and confusing time as it was, never mind, you know, the added element here of the RFID tags.
Liz, were these tested on animals before being implanted in humans?
Well, yes, actually. In fact, the VeriChip, which is the human implantable form of RFID, it's glass encapsulated and injected into the upper arm and the triceps area. The idea for that came from the pet world. The VeriChip is almost identical to the chip that you put in the scruff of your pet's neck. Mm. And we have a picture of that comparison at our website at spychips.com. I have a picture up showing the VeriChip next to the Home Again chip marketed by Shearing Plough. You can see you cannot tell the difference. And by the way, these things are much larger than a grain of rice, like they've been saying. I mean, I have a picture of them next to a long grain of rice, the longest grain I could find in my pantry. They're much larger.
And they're larger.
Oh, no, because I was thinking of putting one in my parrot, but it would probably make him lopsided when he flies.
Well, I don't know about that. But it's pretty lightweight, actually. But it's one honker of a thing to put in your arm, and of course the device to put it in is equally large. But Michael, I'd like to get back to your question on the government uses too. Not only Guantanamo Bay, but we have some more current uses. Of course, the passports are one. The government is using RFID to in visitor documents as part of their U.S. visit program right now. And there's a scary development with that. I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but I found an RFP, a request for proposal, put out by the Department of Homeland Security. They're talking about beefing up this ability to read these RFID tags remotely. In fact, they say they want someone to come up with a way to read these from 25 feet away, be able to pinpoint where people are in a specific lane when they're coming in, to be able to read these tags on people as they're speeding by at 55 miles an hour,
Wow.
Be able to read up to 55 tokens in a bus from a distance of 25 feet. And, of course, they want to be able to read this thing no matter where it is. If you've got it folded up in your pocket, stashed in your purse, or hidden under the seat of your car, they want to be able to do that. Oh, and they even talk about being able to read them on pedestrians on street corners, believe it or not. Now,
wait a second. Let me see if I understand this. What you're saying is that wherever they put these chips, whether it's in your Visa or your credit card or anything you have on you, that they're trying to develop a technology so that when I'm traveling along the road, they'll have a reader when I pass it.
Well, what they're trying to do, as far as the RFP goes, it was for the chips that they would put in. Remember that chips operate on different frequencies and different protocols, But they want to be able to read their chips, the ones designed for them, for their visitor documents.
Right, so that with visa documents and others of people who travel around this country and go past readers, these are foreigners who come in, immigrants or tourists or whatever, they'll be able to find those people wherever they are.
On their specific documents that they put these into, for example, the U.S. visit documents, we don't know how widespread it would be, but we can only guess now. You know, if they can do it with the U.S. visit documents, they'll want to do it with others. In fact, in the RFP, Michael, they say as an incentive to those people who are going to come up with these ideas, we may want to use this in other ways.
Well, this way already is scary because this really means if you're an immigrant coming in or a tourist with your papers, and you have to have your papers with you all the time, and they begin to put readers up all over, they're going to know where you are all the time.
Yeah, it's like a global positioning satellite, isn't it? But it not only says where you are, it says who you are.
Well, it would, and of course, it doesn't read from that distance, but 25 feet is plenty of distance, you know, to read someone as they walk through a doorway or to have a reader in a lamppost so that when people drive by, you pick up the tags. So there are so many different uses. And the scary thing is the Department of Homeland Security is the department that's going to be creating our national driver's license standards. As you remember, the Real ID Act was passed in the spring. Mm-hmm. And our concern is that they're going to try to put RFID in driver's licenses, make that a standard nationwide. And can you imagine already that driver's license is set up to be a national ID by default because you have to have one to participate in modern society. Now add to that the RFID tag, and then suddenly you have not only a national ID, you have a remotely readable national ID.
Liz, so the RFP that Homeland Security issued, is that allocating money to private individuals or organizations that come up with this?
Well, they were seeking proposals, seeking information.
And then they'd partner with the entity who proposed it.
We don't know if they have yet or not. In fact, I have to keep following up on that. But they were certainly looking for people to do that. And believe me, there are plenty of companies out there who are ready to deliver.
No, but the driver's license really gives this an immediate focus for everybody in the United States. And that's really saying we're not just going to have a national identity card, essentially a driver's license, but we're going to have a way of tracking every single person who has a driver's license.
If in fact, they do our RFID tag. I mean, that's the fear. We don't know yet. We haven't seen those standards. But you can bet if they could do it, they would do it. And that's why we as citizens need to speak up and say no. That's why people need to buy the book Spy Chips. They need to understand what this technology is about, what the implications are. As you know, Michael, we lay out in there, you know, many, many uses, proof of what they plan to do with this in their own words. We've got patents and patent applications that from companies like IBM. I mean, and it's not just one company. Many, many companies are planning to do this.
Don't feel so shocked about IBM. They played a major role in organizing the Jewish population in the 30s in Germany.
Well, you're right about that, and we bring that out. In fact, that they were the ones who developed that punch card technology for
Hitler. Right. That's right.
That's correct.
And they got a huge amount of money to lease that to him.
That's right.
Now, the book is remarkable. I mean, it's groundbreaking. I mean, it's frightening. And at first, I was skeptical. But as I see already, even in the time we've talked, it's growing. I mean, already spy chips are growing in the last few months.
And you know what's really interesting, Michael? If you listen to the president's speech, he referred to wanting a medical record for all Americans. And that was sort of a little bit of a tie into RFID, and I'll tell you why. It's because Tommy Thompson, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, when he left the Bush administration, where did he go? He joined the board of the Verichip Corporation.
That's amazing.
He joined the board of Verichip. He's on their board, you know, high paid, tentacles in Washington. You know, they don't hire someone like that for nothing. And he went on national TV not shortly after, and he's talking about every American having one of these chips to link to their medical records electronically, okay, and talking about replacing military dog tags with these. So this link here, you know, we want to have an electronic medical record for all Americans.
You know, that's an important thing, especially with Tommy Thompson, because people, listeners may recall, he's the one who really cut the heart out of the welfare system in this country. And you can look at these chips not only for their privacy invasion, but for what it means to have a medical link up to probably be able to cut the heart out of the healthcare system.
He was the governor of my home state of Wisconsin. Before he came and cut the heart out of welfare, he cut the heart out of what was a really fine progressive state and put them in the hole, reduced the university out there. He was truly a disaster for the state of Wisconsin. I guess he made his bones that way, and that's what got him the job in Washington. And now he's going even higher and further.
Well, he's beloved. He was multiple times he was the governor of Wisconsin, and at least some people really, really like him. they hire somebody who's likable like that, who goes on, you know, national television and tells everybody, you know, you can trust me. You know, I'm the former governor of Wisconsin, beloved Tommy Thompson. You know, and I used to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And by the way, you know, bird flu's coming. Everybody runs scared. And in the meantime, let's get chips so we can keep track of you and help you out in the time of need.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
That's going to be the message.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what do you – give us some of your thoughts about how you've been fighting this and how you think people ought to fight it.
Well, get informed. That's number one. You know, a lot of people don't even know that this technology exists. I mean, who would ever dream that this would happen? I mean, it sounds like science fiction. It's actually science fact. Our book has a tremendous amount of information, and, of course, we look at it from the privacy and civil liberties aspect. You can go to other books that will talk about it, you know, from a technical perspective and be touting how wonderful it is for companies and how they're going to save money. Well, I think you need to look at the other perspective, too, because they're not telling you about all the downsides. Our website at spychips.com has lots and lots of information. We have a free newsletter. People can sign up for that. They can join Caspian, which is the organization I belong to, and learn about all types of surveillance like RFID and of course, supermarket shopper cards, which are closely related. And one day they hope we'll have an RFID tag in them, too. And the other thing is to shop wisely. We as consumers have a huge lever, and that's our pocketbooks. And companies exist because of us. And if we refuse to shop in stores that promote the technology, stores like Walmart, if we refuse to buy products from companies that are promoting it, like Procter & Gamble, like Gillette, like Unilever, like Kraft, and we say, you know, we're going to opt for more privacy-friendly companies, we're going to shop and buy their products and reward them richly, then the free marketplace will come to the rescue. Hopefully, you know, that will make a change when they see consumers are not buying their stuff and they're writing to them and saying, look, we just don't like your plans. Now, on the government front, we need to talk to our legislators. Already people are bringing this forward in New Hampshire. There's a bill, and it looks like it's going to pass, requiring labeling. We believe people should know when products contain RFID tags so they can make decisions in the free marketplace. And, of course, some legislators are going even further because they find this technology, you know, so repulsive and so threatening to privacy and civil liberties.
Well, this is just wonderful work you've been doing, Liz, and it's really bringing attention of the country, I think, to the issue. And we want to encourage people, again, the book is called Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. And it's a wonderful, wonderful book.
Well, Michael, thank you. And please mention that it's also interesting. It's, you know, we didn't want to write a dry, boring book. We certainly could have done that because a lot of it could be dry and boring. But there's a Soviet spy, two mentions of whipped cream, a talking plant, okay, and of course lipstick figures in prominently into this, and people will have to read to find out why. But we've been told it reads like a techno thriller, but there are hundreds of footnotes.
It does read extremely well. I mean, extremely well. You can't put it down when you pick it up. And the relationship, of course, that it has to my Guantanamo clients has always been amazing and shocking to me.
Liz, it's been a pleasure having you on Law and Disorder once again.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you.